I'm Jennifer Spiegler. If you came in late, I'm Jennifer Spiegler. I'm the Vice President of Strategic Partnerships for Cognito Interactive, and today I am standing in for my colleague, Glenn Albright, who is a faculty member at Baruch College and is doing a presentation on primary care mental health integration in another room. I think I'll take a drink of water. Can I do that? Can I? Anybody who wants to stand up and stretch can stand up and stretch.
Actually, I have a quick question.
Oh, sure.
Just before you get too far. Right at the end, you said this is available in what, 10 school districts at no cost?
No. 10 states.
Or 10 states.
Yeah.
At no cost.
At no
cost.
The cost is being footed by departments of health, departments of mental health, nonprofits like the Ohio Suicide Prevention Foundation or Mental Health America of Texas. They're the ones who've had this training the longest. The California Department of Education through their CalMESA funding, which is Mental Health Services Act funding. Oh, you are.
I didn't have much.
Thank you. So. That particular training has been on the market since 2010. And because of the scalability of this kind of training, it really makes sense to do this from a top-down perspective. So where are you from? You don't have it. We tried. So it is available in Alaska, California, parts of Washington State, but not a lot of Washington State, Texas, Illinois, Ohio, New York, Maryland. They haven't quite launched yet, but they're getting ready to launch. And Monroe County, Florida. And a lot of the implementation is being done through grant resources. But there are also states, or North Dakota is another one, where there's been in Alaska it was adopted as a legislative line item because it was there was a very active student government organization that had the audacity to go and tell the legislators that they wanted their teachers to have this training, and the legislature allocated funding for 3 years for the program. So. Talk about student empowerment. So we're going to switch now. We're going to move from high school to universities and from high school students, average high school students, to talk about student veterans. Again, this is research that was conducted by Glenn Albright. That's me, and I'm still employed by Cognito Interactive. And Glenn is very, very, and I'm sorry he's not here to present this, because he's very, very passionate about veterans and about student veterans. He is the advisor of a student veteran organization on his own campus at Baruch College, which is part of the City University of New York. About a year and a half ago, we developed a training to address some of the issues surrounding student veterans. Almost a million, the data here is a little bit old. We think that almost a million undergraduate students are veterans at this point or have had some military service, and that veterans, as of 2008, were more than 4% of all undergraduate students. But veterans come to the classroom with a very different set of life experience and expectations than the average 18-year-old in America. So these, as the student characteristics bear out, these tend to be older students. Some of them are already in their families, and in a lot of ways they just don't fit the general profile of an undergraduate. 64% of these veterans are enrolled in public colleges and 26% are enrolled in private colleges. And a lot of them are benefiting from the GI Bill, the 2001 GI Bill. So there's a lot of schools out there who are looking to attract veterans and their GI Bill dollars to the school, but their faculty don't necessarily know what to expect from these students. Many of the faculty have never been in the military and may not know, now that we have an all-volunteer army, they may not know anybody who's ever been in the military. So what we do know about veteran students is that versus the general population of students, their mental health status is somewhat compromised. A lot of them have PTSD or signs of PTSD. If it's not PTSD, it might be some other kind of post-deployment stress, reintegration problems, depression, a lot of the things that are likely to be part of post-deployment life for veterans. Their suicide rates are considerably higher than the general population, shockingly so. The Veterans Administration is obviously, and the active duty branches are looking desperately to address this problem, but the university is a place that makes sense to work with veterans. The VA doesn't have access to all veterans by a long shot. A lot of veterans don't ever use VA services. But these are students now in classrooms, and the classrooms have to be ready to accept them. So one of the issues when we started to develop this training was not stigmatizing student veterans as people with mental health disorders. And really, this training looks at helping faculty members understand that these are students, this is a cultural competency program as much as it's a mental health program. It's let's look at our students, let's appreciate the life experience that they bring to the classroom, let's add in a level of sensitivity about that experience, and let's package that in a way that makes it relevant to, and this is a training for faculty and staff, so it makes it relevant to faculty and staff and their interactions with veteran students. In developing this training and disseminating it, we are working together with the Veteran Students of America, and they have been great partners in this process as subject matter experts and as a bridge to campus chapters of student veterans. So we know that communication skills are at the core of changing health behaviors, and again, as I just as you saw in the last demonstration, we are really focused on bringing role play into the training of individuals to try to change those health behaviors, the health behaviors of the other person. So again, this is an approach. This training is not listed in the National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs and Practices, but it benefits from that methodology and the approach. And is now, I think, the ninth program in a series of gatekeeper role play trainings that we have developed. And we are seeing very, very consistent outcomes from that. We're, again, trying to get faculty members, staff members, to go into these role play scenarios to get practice to do the things in a private situation that you then want them to be able to do in real life. So this training has three different conversations. It's meant to address the issues of staff as well as faculty, because one of the big challenges that students have on campus is that staff are very unaware of their challenges. In the first conversation, for example, you see this character who has to go in and talk and she's been redeployed in the middle of a semester. So she has to go and find out what she does in terms of her matriculation and costs involved and deferring her her schooling. So it's a conversation in making an effective referral for the student and a sensitive referral. In the second conversation, you take on the role of a teacher and you have to manage a classroom discussion where one of the students has been very, very vocally anti-military. It's a political discussion and it teaches you the skills, the conversation skills of reframing that discussion to make it less, to make it more objective and less of a shock for the, more acceptable to the veteran students in the classroom. And the third conversation, which is really a mental health conversation, is about referring the student to support services, similar to the conversation you saw in high school, except again, these are tailored to the user. These are tailored to the context where they're being used. So if you want the college professor to be able to address issues with their student, you want to give them a model, which is the college professor. And these are follow-up data that we have been able to get from faculty and staff at 11 institutions. The total N here is almost 300. And you can see that in the gatekeeper skills, which are, again, these the ability to identify, approach, and refer students, a big jump, statistically significant jump from pre to post. And then, interestingly, the decrement, we always know that post-training you're going to get a decrement of skill level, but here, even at 12 weeks, the change is still statistically significant. And we have internally a hypothesis about why that is the case. And we think it has to do with the role play, that the role play and its focus on conversation skills are something that you can use regardless of whether or not you have a suicidal or a student in crisis in your class. That these are skills in how to really broach a topic of concern and discuss your concerns with a student. Active listening is a very important part of this training, and again, it's using some of these motivational interviewing techniques, reflective listening, reframing, and not judging the student, making the student feel heard and accepted. We also see a similar change in the military cultural competency skills. So the awareness, the ability to talk with a student about their military service in a culturally sensitive way. We also see changes that are significant and remain significant in self-efficacy. And the approach and referral rates at follow-up here, 49% reported an increase in the number of student veterans that they approached to discuss their concerns. And 48% reported a similar increase in referring student veterans to mental health and non-mental health campuses. Campus offices. One of the things that the training allows you to do as an implementer on a college campus is integrate the referral services within the training. So it takes you that next 10 yards of being able to say, you have a problem, you need to go and see X, Y, and Z, and here's their phone number. Not just saying, oh, go and make a referral, but here's the person to whom you need to refer on our campus. The other change is 50% reported an increase in the number of conversations they had with other faculty, staff, and administrators regarding student veterans that they were concerned about. And this kind of shift in the conversation within the institution is also significant, both on the cultural competency side and on the mental health gatekeeping side. one of the things that we know about teachers are that they're very, very exigent about education and about training resources. In this study and at POST, in the POST survey, 100% of the participants rated the program as good, very good, or excellent. Over 80% were in the very good or excellent category. 97% said that they would recommend the training to colleagues. 95% said that the program was based on scenarios that were relevant to their work with students. 96% said the program would aid them in getting help to their veteran students. And 99% said that the program was easy to use. I think that's significant, and we get a very similar number when we're looking at the high school. I didn't show you participant ratings for that program, but these programs are designed for laymen, for non-technical people. They're delivered on the internet. You go, you click a link, you fill in a form, you start training. You don't need to be trained to do them. And even the technological requirements are such that they are able to be accessed by people in institutions with less than the most up-to-date computer. Browser versioning is becoming a problem, but no, it's really if you're in a school that is not particularly well resourced, or in a university that's not particularly well resourced, you can take these trainings. So we get very, very good response feedback from faculty and staff. They find it realistic. They find that the interactive conversations are really very helpful to them. And they recognize that they really are not people with prior military experience, and it's very helpful to have these actual conversations that they can experience. And I guess on the outro, I would say that the first course that you see on the left-hand side is the one that this research was done about, and it is in the Best Practices Registry of the Suicide Prevention Resource Center. We continue to do capture and analyze data around this training. And we have just launched a second training, which is a peer-to-peer training for student veterans to help their other student veterans. So we had initially been asked to create a training program for all students to be able to support student veterans. And as we were doing our needs analysis for that, it became very evident that student veterans don't want non-veteran students to try to help them with their problems. So it's really a buddy system that helps a veteran student become a mentor to another student.